BBC Sounds. Music, radio, podcasts.
On the Football Daily Podcast, this is the EuroLeagues.
Hello from me, John Bennett. Yes, welcome to EuroLeagues. It's been a really busy week for some of the top clubs in Europe, especially when it comes to managers. I'm delighted to say that I'm joined tonight by Julien Arons, James Horncastle and Christophe Terreur. Hello to all of you. I want to start with, I hope an argument anyway, because both Julien and James were taken aback on Wednesday by some amazing moments of skill in their respective countries that they cover. So, Jules, the Mbappe drag back and nutmeg against Lorient. You were waxing lyrical about that on social media. And for you, James, Gianluca Scamacca, that scissor kick, which you were talking about on social media, this was your tweet, that scissor kick slaps harder than at the drive-ins one-armed scissor. you love that goal, James.
Yeah, like I love that song. You have to be sort of late 90s, early 2000s grunge. Jules is shaking his head. He's never heard this song.
I don't know what you're talking about. And I didn't see the tweet either. I saw the goal. I love the goal, but I'm not sure about the reference.
I had to Google it, I've got to admit. Yeah, we're not going to get you to sing it, James. Let's put it that way. But Christophe, what was the best skill? I think you have to be the adjudicator here. You have to be the judge. What was the best? The Mbappe?
I go for the at the driving reference, basically. I knew the song.
The tweet,
so
the skill.
It's just the lyrics that make the skill even more wonderful. You can put that as a soundtrack. Julien could have put Serge Gainsbourg's famous hit, Je suis venu te dire que je m'en vais. For Mbappe, it's for
nice.
every single song, every single skill of Mbappe. So
it was beautiful, though, wasn't it, Jules? It was an amazing bit of skill.
It was a reminder of Karim Benzema.
Just describe it for us.
Yeah, the drag back and the nutmeg, like you said, right by the corner line, if you want. Yeah, a bit like what Benzema did to Atletico Madrid. Although this one was one on one for Kylian and Orbe against the West defender. But talking about skills,
It reminded me of one of the great skills of Ronaldo Fenomeno when he just moved to Inter on the sideline.
And the flip-flap,
on the bed.
It was very close to that.
It was close. I was going to say, Emmanuel Macron, the French president, played in a charity match yesterday for a great cause with a lot of former pros. Deschamps was there, Blanc, Pires, Desailly, a lot of the 1998. I wasn't there. I could not make it. President Macron is terrible at football. And he got me thinking, like, really bad. He scored a penalty because they let him score the penalty. Every year he plays in the same game, this game, and every year they give him a penalty and he scores the penalty, right? But he can't play football for his life. Which made me think, should he really be doing those games where television is there, where we can all see that he doesn't even have, like,
was
the
it
beginning
that bad?
Of a touch?
The way he struck the penalty.
Yeah.
But it went in.
Yeah, the keeper didn't even move. I mean, you could see he's not very comfortable anyway. I mean, I've played with Horny, so I know how Horny plays. He's got an eye for goal, not much more but that. Christophe, I guess,
hey,
is fit.
That's all you need.
Yeah, Christophe is fit because he does a lot of cycling and he walks his dog like 5 hours a day. You, JB, I'm not so sure what kind of players I would expect.
Are you saying I'd be worse than Macron?
I'm not sure. Guillaume probably went to La Masia when he was like 5 until 10 and he's got his brain and everything. But if you're not good at football, don't go somewhere with his cameras. That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying.
We will get to Guillaume in a moment because he has got a Zoom background for the show, which is making us all jealous. We'll get to him in a moment.
Guillaume's background is like the. Do you remember the Cisco thong song? It's pretty much like that.
Let's build the tension before we get to Guillaume Balague. He's going to make a cameo appearance on EuroLeagues
today. I can't
believe
you just said that song.
Let's move on quickly. Coming up on EuroLeagues, we'll get the latest from the Netherlands on Arne Slot's possible move to Liverpool. We'll ask if he'll be a good fit at Anfield. But tonight, he has confirmed to a Dutch TV channel, Arne Slot, the Feyenoord boss, that he wants the Liverpool job. He said, it's no secret. I want to go to Liverpool. The clubs are negotiating. We have to wait until an agreement is reached, but I have every confidence in that. This is before a game because Feyenoord are playing as we speak. Are you surprised, Jules, that he's been so honest there?
I like it. I think it's a good thing. That's what he wants. We kind of all know that he wanted to go anywhere. That has been briefed to us. We knew that the two clubs were discussing it. We're talking around 10 million euros, maybe a little bit more. a compensation because he's still on the contract and Feyenoord are not going to let him go for nothing. So I think Liverpool were prepared for that. Michael Edwards, Richard Hughes, all that new recruitment team, sporting director, head of football, whatever you want to call it. It's normal. I think it's normal. They were prepared for it and I'm sure they will find an agreement.
Much more on that later. We'll be in the Netherlands to get the very latest. We'll also ask why Bayern Munich appears so keen to make Ralf Rangnick their next manager. We'll ask how big a blow it was to miss out on Julian Nagelsmann for Bayern. And an in-depth look at Inter after they wrapped up the Serie A title this week. James has been on his travels to watch that unfolding. But we're going to start on the theme of managers. We've been talking for some time on EuroLeagues about what a busy summer it's going to be across Europe. Numerous big clubs looking to make head coach appointments and several out-of-work big-name managers, huge names looking to find a new club. And today, Barcelona have confirmed their head coach Xavi is staying. He had announced in January that he was leaving in the summer, but now a change of heart. The Barcelona president, Joan Laporta, said earlier, "We know that he made some statements in the middle of the season, but today we have the good news that he's staying and he's conveyed to me the enthusiasm and confidence he has in the project." Who better to give us the latest on this than EuroLeague's stalwart Guillaume Balaguer? He's working in Miami today. We've got him for a few minutes. So let's get to this Zoom background. James, go on. You describe this Zoom background.
Just
for
a
us.
Guy topless walking behind Guillaume.
Where is Guillaume? It looks to me like Tracy Island from Thunderbirds. But go on, James. You describe this background.
Tracy Island. I mean, no, it is. It is. I'm waiting for Guillaume to sort of dye his hair chrome. It's actually quite close to that, and then to suddenly get started, and dumps like a truck.
You're on the beach, Gear. There's a palm tree behind you. Tell us where you are. Hello, by the way.
Two palm trees. There is some sand, blue skies, with some white clouds, some green around me as well. Somebody, it's very difficult. I'm in Miami, and it's very difficult not to look like Miami. So, this is Ocean Drive, which, of course, you've all been to, and if you haven't, you have to. And I've been trying to avoid sound because every single bar here along Ocean Drive is full of music. Somebody has decided to park himself and his sound system next to me, so you probably hear it, which gives it a little bit more of Miami background to the chat.
The connection is better than in your own home in Spain, to be fair, so well done.
It looks like a fake background. It does look like you're at home, but we're going to believe you. You are in Miami. So let's get to Xavi then. He seemed determined to join you on the beach in Miami, have the quiet life, leave Barcelona, leave management behind, but now he's staying with the club. What led to this change of heart for Xavi?
Well, we've all been in that place where it's like, you know what? I had enough. And that's where he was when he said it after the defeat against Villarreal, because he felt that the club weren't backing him up, that the fans weren't really appreciating his efforts, that the media, the entourage, weren't really complimenting on his success or what he considered a success. And then he relaxed. All of a sudden, the focus was on the players, and the players were like, oh, right, it's our time now. And they started to stop thinking about themselves and started thinking of the team. He was surprised by some of the players saying, actually, you should stay. And what do we have to do for you to stay? But that originally didn't change his mind. And to be honest, 2 days ago, the coaching staff thought that he hadn't changed his mind. But what had happened in the last few weeks is that he's seen an improvement, better training, basically. And they sharpened it up. They're going to get a couple of new members of the coaching staff to improve that. And you've seen the consequences. Since he said goodbye, he went 10 wins, 3 draws, in a period that looked, as the season progressed, the performances were better. And then they found Real Madrid and before PSG. And I know that in the mind of Xavi, the PSG defeat gets explained by a referee, and the Real Madrid defeat gets explained by referee, and the 11-point difference in the league gets mostly explained by referees. So if you think that way, and you are surrounded by people that think similar to you, you think, you know, we're not that far from winning the biggest trophies. So I will give it a shot, another shot. And in fact, what he's doing is continuing with a contract that finishes at the end of next summer. So little by little, he started to convince himself that, yes, he's actually improved players recently. The team is getting better. And he didn't want to leave the job because now he's got the backing of the club. the fans are going like, no, actually, you would be good staying on. And the players, yes, they are closer to him than they've been before.
And also, to be fair, Guillaume, financially, Barcelona, as we know, is difficult. And to be able to keep him, so not having to go to, for another manager and another staff, and which will cost a lot of money, it's good. And Laporta said today in his press conference, when he was sat with Xavi and Deco was there and Juste was there and everybody, he also said like he loves this club. And there's surely a part of this where he also stayed almost for favor to the club to say, okay, yeah, you need me to stay. And financially, it would be good as well because it would be hard, even with Rafa Marquez, et cetera, et cetera. It'd be better for the club if I stay. And in a way, that's also a good thing from Xavi, I think.
There is a point in what you say, Jules. The financial situation means that they cannot convince Klopp, for instance, to change his sabbatical plans or, as Deco would have liked, pay for Luis Enrique. Interestingly enough, I think the feedback that Deco got from Luis Enrique's people, let's say, was that he would be happy to come back. So there is no money for any of that. And what there is the need of is for somebody that understands the situation of Barcelona. And Xavi wants better players, but he knows they're going to have to sell players as well. So he's like, as you say, I'm a Barcelona fan first and foremost, Xavi thinks. And if now I have to go with what I've got, great, by the way. He has brought a lot of youngsters through and will continue to do so. So from that point of view, he knows the academy, he knows the club, he knows the expectations. So he kind of fits. But one thing that they said in this press conference, Laporta especially, is that they had not spoken to anybody in the last few weeks. And that's a big lie. Because they have spoken. And they did have to because Xavi was going, wasn't he? So they organized a meeting with Hansi Flick. They heard some managers that were like, sorry, no. So they spoke to them. What is true is that they didn't put an offer for anybody. And Laporta insisted, I want Xavi to stay. So the club has got a big say in what has happened with Xavi changing his mind. But deep down, it's a lesson to all of us. When you're tired, do not take big decisions. And that's what's happening with Xavi. He feels his energies are renewed. And he feels he can deal with what's coming, which is another hope for big titles, even though I think that all of us will agree that they're very short of that. They're far away from it.
Guillaume, did Xavi get any guarantees that all of his talented young players will stay, or do they still financially have to sell some of their prospects? Because financially, yeah, they're still in a bad place.
Yeah, the league hasn't confirmed the 1v1 rule, which is that you sell for one and then you buy for one. And at the moment, what it looks like is that they're going to have to, some of the money they will get from selling, La Liga will keep, because they financially, they're still in a good position. Laporta, the ever optimistic, says, oh, don't worry, we'll be fine and we'll get players, blah, 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 blah. But they told Xavi, look, you know the situation. If we cannot basically get to the 1v1 rule, then we're going to have to sell players. I think they will have to. They're waiting. One of the levers was going to bring about 40 million euros this summer. They're gone. Those millions are not coming. The people are not answering emails. So there's going to be a big gap. And of course, by not being in the Club World Cup, that will have reported 50 million euros at least. That's another, not gap because it wasn't budgeted, but it's another income that they cannot have. So yes, rumours you'll have in the press now every day about Frankie de Jong, about Araujo, about Ansu Fati, and all those that Barcelona can get money for, because yes, they'll have to sell. But Xavi's like, yeah, okay. But do get me a top holding midfielder, please. Zubimendi of Real Sociedad. Don't get me Oriol Romeu. And they said they'll do the best. So that's where we are. And it's faith, basically, what Xavi has put in the club, that they can improve the squad.
Guillaume, he is basically going to just see out what was remaining on his contract anyway, right? Which is, it was due to expire in 2025. He's not extended or signed a new deal, so to speak.
That's a very, very good point, because you do something like this where everybody's going to wonder what mental state Xavi is, as in health-wise. Can he deal with pressure? Because, you know, 3 months ago he couldn't and now he can. Isn't that too much that we're asking Xavi, blah, blah, blah? A way to finish with all that would have been, look, not only is he staying, we believe in him so much that we're giving him a 3-year contract. And none of that took place. Partly because Xavi's like, happy to have one more year for now. But partly, guess who's finishing contract next summer? Pep Guardiola, Mikel Arteta, and Luis Enrique. So I think the dream of Deco will be to convince Luis Enrique, for instance, as I said earlier.
Guillaume, we're going to let you go and enjoy Miami. What's the plan now? I've been mesmerised. I know this is radio, so this won't be great for the listeners, but I've been mesmerised by what's going on behind you, all the people walking past on the beach. I'm getting a suntan just watching you. What's the plan now in Miami?
A party with Cisco.
What do you mean you want to listen to what I was saying?
Living la vida loca.
All right. Well, there is a cocktail waiting for me across the road. I think I'm going to go into the beach. And all the job that I needed to do here has been done already. Oh, no, actually, I'm talking to Redondo, Fernando Redondo's son, Inter Miami's player tomorrow.
Ooh,
wow. In the stadium. So that'll be an interesting conversation to have.
Guillaume, thank you so much for joining us from sunny Miami, making us all jealous. Now let's go from Miami to Germany, because Bayern Munich appear to be a step closer to appointing their next manager for next season. More on the favourite shortly. He's a big name, but it won't be the man who had been linked with several jobs, including a return to Bayern, who sacked him last year, Julian Nagelsmann. He put an end in the last 7 days to speculation about his future by signing a new contract to commit his future to the German national team. So he's going to do the Euros, then he'll do the World Cup as well in 2026. Christoph, are you surprised they've taken this decision now, that the German FA, were they forced to do it, do you think, because of interest from elsewhere? Because surely you'd see how the Euros go before committing to a further 2 years of Nagelsmann.
Well, you see it with a lot of national managers signing new deals just before tournament. Domenico Tedesco, Belgian national manager, did the same. But I think they put a clause in it. If the Euros go wrong, then they might get rid of him. But yeah, I didn't see Nagelsmann, to be fair, returning to Bayern after what had happened.
It would have been strange, wouldn't it, to see him?
Yeah, it would have been a strange decision. You sack somebody and take him back a year later, which is strange. And probably he used all the interest to get a better contract at the German National Federation. He played it smart, I guess.
Could you have seen Nagelsmann going back, Jules? It would have been strange, wouldn't it? Although part of him would probably want to put it right, wouldn't he?
Yeah, and I think he was tempted. The problem was there were still some players there who didn't like him in his first stint and that he didn't like too. There were still people at the club at boardroom level who, again, were not too keen on some of his methods, on some of his attitude and his personality. So those issues that were there in the first time he was at the club would have still been there. And also, I think, while we saw with Germany the last two games, the last few weeks, let's put it that way, I've been really encouraging. I think if they'd been battered by France and then by the Dutch in the two friendlies that they just had in the last international break in March, and they both won, and especially the France game well and convincingly, with Musiala, with Toni Kroos coming back, with Florian Wirtz looking good, looking better certainly, I think that was a big encouragement for him to say, you know what, this is a good generation. Certainly when you've got Musiala and Wirtz in the same team and Kroos coming back to the national team, let's see. I've got nothing to lose at the Euros, because even if they don't do well at the Euros, you can always say, listen, I've been here only a few months. The World Cup in the US in 2026 is a far more realistic goal and aim, ambition for him and for this generation of players too. So I can understand why he extended now. He's got a very strong relationship with Rudi Völler, who is the kind of general manager of the national team in Germany, who wanted him to commit to a longer contract. And also because that Bayern option was for him maybe not as strong as it would have been for somebody else.
So now Bayern Munich appear to be edging closer to making the former Manchester United interim manager Ralf Rangnick their new head coach. So Rangnick's admitted he's been contacted by Bayern Munich about the manager's job. He's currently with Austria, and he has been saying, if Bayern say we want you, and then I would also have to ask myself, do I really want this? If I want to do something else, I will first discuss it with the Austrian FA. James, are you surprised that Ralf Rangnick is the man that Bayern want? For me, he has got a great track record. Of course, you ignore what happened at Manchester United, an amazing job he did, RB Leipzig, Hoffenheim. But for me, he's more of a guy who's upstairs. He's more of a sporting director of football, isn't he, than a head coach?
I suppose that's one way of looking at him, JB. I mean, he did go a long time without coaching between his times at Schalke and his interim stint with Manchester United. He was seen as a coordinator, He was someone who established a philosophy at a multi-club, the most successful multi-club in the world, if you like, at Red Bull. But I think he's clearly got the bug again when it comes to coaching. You know, before he took over at Manchester United, he'd had long protracted talks with AC Milan about taking over there, which ultimately then fell through. I think at United, remember, he was supposed to stay on after his, what, 5-month stint as coach to be a consultant and help them change the culture at Manchester United. And I think, you know, he's clearly done a very good job so far with Austria. And, you know, if you look at some of their results in qualifying, also the 6-1 win against Turkey, and I know we say this on the eve of every European Championship, that Turkey looked like the team that kind of upset everyone. But, I mean, they really kind of reframed that debate by beating them 6-1. I think what's curious about this is that, you know, Bayern, ever since Jupinkers won the treble, have tried to go for, you know, the cutting edge in coaching. And that was the case with Pep. You know, they were the first club to persuade him to leave Spain. And, I know Pep was on a sabbatical, but, you know, it was a bit of a surprise that he went to Bayern when Man United were looking for a successor to Sir Alex Ferguson. And, you know, subsequently, you had people like Niko Kovac, you've had Hansi Flick, you've had Nagelsmann, Tuchel, you know, guys who are, if not of the same generation, but certainly up and coming, or guys who've recently established themselves. Ranić feels to me like a, let's go back to the Heinkes kind of thing. Let's go back to a guy who really understands German football, hasn't been at this club, but understands what it would mean to be at this club, has managed big clubs before, can maybe help us reset the culture and maybe bring some of that Red Bull know-how to Bayern, as Bayern itself looks to not just win the Bundesliga and get back on top, but maybe reconceptualize what Bayern is in 2024 for the next 10 years. I think that, you know, so I think that might be something that appeals to them when it comes to having a little bit of a chat with Ralf Rangnick.
It couldn't be more different, though, Jules, from Xabi Alonso, who they seem desperate to appoint. So this doesn't suggest that there's much of a plan in the background. Oh, we'll go for Alonso, the new up-and-comer. Oh, no, we'll go for Rangnick now, the established name.
Unless the plan is, and it's no offence to Rangnick, and maybe it's the cynic in me.
No, uh-oh. But
you know, James.
Here we go.
No,
here we go.
I think Rangnick would be very happy to come for a year, maybe two. I think he's the kind of manager that would accept that because he's Bayern, like James said, because he's 65 years old. This never going to come again.
And then
this,
go upstairs? Would he move upstairs then after?
Yeah, potentially. Although we know how upstairs works at Bayern with Uli Hoeneß and all those people. I don't think it's easy. But he's 65. If he doesn't take the job, if the job is offered to him, he doesn't take it now, he will never come again. And I think someone like him, who obviously grew up and Bayern has been the main club, etc., it must be a dream for him to one day sit on that bench. So I think he has to take it, and you could keep him for a year, you could keep him for two. In a year, maybe Xabi Alonso will come. In a year, maybe Jurgen Klopp will come. In 2 years, maybe somebody else will be available that they're not available now. And I think they better appoint him now for a year instead of going for someone they don't actually really want, that will be a 4-year deal or 3-year deal plus an option or something like that. I think he'd be very happy with anything they want to give him. And it would be a good appointment because, like James said, he will understand the culture, the club. He's a great, one of the best brains that we have in European football. He would be in his element. And I think this would be good. But for me, I still see it as a stopgap almost for then someone bigger to come in a year time or two maximum.
I completely agree with the stopgap theory. If Jules hadn't gone with that, the cynic in me would have gone with that too, because I don't see Rangnick really as a Bayern manager. And I have to say, Hollywood, with all the pressure from the local press, didn't work out. Yeah, it worked a bit at Manchester United, but I don't see him as a Bayern coach, to be fair. But maybe we're all wrong and he does an Ancelotti job at Bayern like he does at Real Madrid. We'll see.
Oh. on the Football Daily Podcast. This is the EuroLeagues.
The next stop on the European football managerial merry-go-round is Liverpool. So first, Xabi Alonso was the favourite. Then we went to Portugal. The Sporting boss, Ruben Amorim, seemed to be the favourite. But now the Feyenoord coach, Arne Slot, appears to be the number one choice and he wants the job. It emerged on Wednesday that Liverpool were in talks with Feyenoord. But we're going to ask now if he's really a good fit for Liverpool. And we'll also get the very latest because there have been some developments over the last few hours. We're joined now by the Dutch football writer, Elko Born. Hello, Elko. Thank you so much for joining us. Bring us up to date because he has said publicly, hasn't he, today that he wants the job. He said it before a match, which it seems extraordinary to me.
Yeah, Feyenoord played a match tonight, so he's interviewed on Dutch TV. And he said that, yeah, he's interested in the Liverpool job. He wants to join. He said the clubs are negotiating right now and that it's his. It's up to him to respect that for now. Let the clubs negotiate. But he made his intentions clear, and his intentions are to join Liverpool if possible.
Did it come as a surprise when the stories emerged on Wednesday that he was the number one choice for Liverpool?
Yeah, it came as a surprise over here. I have to say the feeling here in the Netherlands is that Slot isn't a very exciting new manager. And there were expectations that after a couple of years at Feyenoord, he was ready to leave. Obviously, last year, he came pretty close to joining Spurs and people expected him to take that job. Obviously, that didn't happen last year. But I don't think a lot of people saw Liverpool coming this year. It feels like a huge move for Slot. Obviously, a very, very big club for him to manage. So, yeah, that's kind of beyond what people expected. But if you think about it, I think it makes a lot of sense in some ways.
Like you said, it makes sense. They play this same formation. There's a lot of similarities in the way they play the football, the intensity, the pressing, etc. And when we know that you've watched Feyenoord more than us, but me and James have covered them in Europe, here in England and everything. But what
I don't know... I've watched Roman knock them out 3 years in a row.
Don't listen to him. Don't listen to him. I knew that was coming. But what we don't really know, we can all watch his teams and his games and etc. But in terms of his personality, because we've never met him, you have. Does he have the personality to be able to succeed at a top club like Liverpool with all the expectations and all the pressure, etc.? Do you think he's ready for that challenge now?
I think that's one of the factors that Liverpool have looked at with Slot. Because I do think that's one of his strong points. I think this is a guy with a lot of charm. He's quite funny sometimes when you talk to him and in press conferences as well. And what's especially striking about him, I think, is that he's very able to clearly explain his reasonings behind certain actions. So if a journalist asks him in the press conference after a match, why did you make a certain substitution? Did you have a certain tactical change in mind? Slot is usually able to really articulate his thoughts. And that makes it clear that really has a very clear idea about what he wants his football to look like at his teams. So I think the charm he has, the humor he has, the intelligence he has, and the fact that he's able to communicate this intelligence in a funny and charming way, if need be, it just makes him feel so confident. And that's a good thing, obviously, to radiate towards the press and towards the fans and everybody else. But I think that's really something that he managed to do with his group of players, with his squads as well. So I think the way he communicates and his confidence and his intelligence is really one of his strong points.
Is Slot taking his all backroom staff with him, because Klopp is leaving and Pep Lenders is leaving and his goalkeeper coach, everybody seems to be leaving Liverpool and there's no staff anymore. Does he have his own people that he would bring, or hasn't that been talked about in the Dutch media as yet?
He didn't want to talk about those type of details earlier today when he was interviewed on TV, so that's not quite clear yet. But I would expect him to do that. He said in the past that he's usually he relies a lot, like a lot of modern managers do, obviously, on his own background staff and people that he trusts. So I would expect there will be developments in that department as well. Yeah.
These bald Dutch managers. Yeah. Ten Hag.
That's so bad, so because you've got a long hand. No,
I just wanted, Elke to articulate the differences between Ten Hag and Slot.
Oh, it's interesting, right? Because Ten Hag obviously came from Ajax. And I think, looking back, Ajax would have wanted Slot to succeed Ten Hag at Ajax. But they were dozing off. They were asleep. They didn't see in time that they had this very talented young manager, Slot, right near them in AZ Alkmaar. But Feyenoord took him. And he turned things around, because even though budget-wise Feyenoord is only the third biggest club in the Netherlands, he made them the best club last year, won the league last year. And this year Feyenoord won't win the league, but they still performed really well, won the cup. PSV is having a wonderful, wonderful season. They're very, very good this year. So, okay, Feyenoord is second place. But I think one of the major reasons for that is Arne Slot. And obviously for Ten Hag after leaving Ajax, things haven't been going very well for him at Manchester United. And it will be the question whether Slot will be able to make that move, because that's the age-old question, right? It's a cliche now almost, but to go from the Eredivisie to the Premier League as a player or as a coach is just a huge leap to make.
Yeah, we'll find out. Elko, thank you so much for joining us. That is Elko Born with the latest on Arne Slot, who has admitted that he wants the Liverpool job. Let's talk about title celebrations now. Not Paris Saint-Germain's title celebrations.
Not yet, but
it's been delayed for a few more days. But one half of Milan is celebrating. Inter defeated rivals AC Milan on Monday to clinch their 20th Scudetto. It means we now have title winners in two of Europe's big five leagues. Leverkusen, of course, won in Germany last week. James, you were there to witness Inter winning the title, beating their great rivals to seal the title triumph. That's a perfect way to win the title. They must have been in dreamland, the Inter fans.
Absolutely. I think you'd put this night up there with winning the treble at the Bernabeu in 2010. I think that will still be the pinnacle for Inter fans. But if you were to describe a perfect day and imagine it, it would be winning the league title in the derby, a derby that was hosted by AC Milan. So the Inter fans were the minority in the stadium. You just had the ultras in the Curva Nord. And it was a really significant Scudetto, regardless of winning it against AC Milan, because it was the 20th. And in Italy, for every 10 league titles you win, you get a prestigious star that you can stitch above your crest. Juventus have three, and no one else had two until Inter. And to add to it, Milan were on 19, Inter on 19. And so both Milan clubs wanted to be the first to get to 20 in the city. And it was Inter, although Milan fans throughout the game were unfurling banners which kind of questioned Inter's mathematics. There was one which saying, maths is not an opinion. You're still only on 19 because one of the league titles that is attributed to Inter was given to them in the Calciopoli Tribunal. So they didn't win it on the pitch. And so because of that, later in the game, the Milan ultras unfurled the Juventus emblem, but in the blue and black colours of Inter. And it said, you become everything you always hated. You lose Champions League finals, which is what Juventus have done. Inter obviously lost to Man City in Istanbul. You steal leagues, that was the accusation. So there was a lot of saltiness.
Didn't they try to drown out the celebrations as well at the end on the PA?
That was astonishing. And it was very hard to file. Yeah, a working environment for a journalist, right? The Wi-Fi at San Siro is bad enough as it is. So I was, I had to file something on the final whistle, big, like, sort of long title read, couldn't get on the Wi-Fi. And then I'd say this, how like white noise is used in torture. I mean, it was like this. That was the techno music that was just piped in. If you're a resident in San Siro, you must have been like, what is going on? This is terrible. So they tried to drown out the celebrations. The Inter players then joined the fans in Piazza del Duomo, where the Inter fans drove in a tractor which had a blow-up doll with the Zlatan Ibrahimovic shirt on. They then took the shirt off and burned it.
He'd been rude about them, hadn't he? He'd been rude about them a few years previously.
He had. So, I mean, Zlatan obviously is a former Inter player, won the league with Inter. He moved from Juventus to Inter after the cultural property scandal and made them the most successful team in the mid-2000s. And then he left for Barcelona, he came back and he joined Milan. And he said he'd always wanted to join Milan. His idol was Marco van Basten. He said it was Ronaldo. I think it is Ronaldo, really. But yeah, when they won the league 2 years ago, Zlatan said, send a message to Hakan Çalhanoğlu, to the Milan fans that were gathered around him. And Çalhanoğlu, who'd left Milan to join Inter on a free transfer that year, Milan beat them to the title on the final day of the season. And so on Monday, it was very much like, Hakan, send a message to Zlatan. there were some great banners. One was Hakan Campione, Zlatan in pensione, which is Hakan's a champion, Ibra's now a pensioner. But Ibra's not a pensioner. He's busy trying to find the new manager for AC Milan at this moment in time.
Christoph, you followed this Inter journey as well. Fantastic season. And to win it against the rivals as well, superb.
But they were just above everybody else in the Italian league, basically, until, yeah, Juve were close in January, but then basically fell off the cliff and didn't do anything anymore. But Inter seemed to have gone from a very good side last season, who made it into the Champions League final. But this season, they were just far better than they were last season, only not in the Champions League, where they lost their game against Atletico. But they have had good football. They scored a lot of goals. They were defensively very good. So it was a well-balanced team. And it's maybe the contradiction in this team is that they had to sell a lot of players over the last few years. I think that James might know it better, but if I count quickly, I only see like four or five players that survived from the previous league winning team like 3 years ago. So they went through a huge turmoil, and still Simone Inzaghi got the best out of this team. And this team really plays like the manager wants it to do. I think it's his team, and we'll see what happens next with them. But they were really dominating a league like Juventus used to do it, and that's what the Milan fans saw, right? Yeah, they turned it a bit into Juventus this season.
Thank you so much to Julian Arons, to James Horncastle, and to Christoph Terreur.
The people of Miami who are passing passing behind Guillaume Balaguer.
Our special cameo guests on EuroLeagues this week. That's it for this episode of The Football Daily. The next one will be 72 Plus with Aaron Paul and Joby McEnough. This week they're joined by the West Brom captain Jed Wallace ahead of the penultimate weekend in the Championship. And with this Saturday, the final day in League One and League Two.